Some people think that life as a monk is very boring, but I live a really interesting life as a monk. I've been coming here, I think, almost must be a record, so many Friday nights in a row without missing one. But next week I won't be here, because next week I have to work overseas. I have to teach a meditation retreat at the Sheraton Resort in Hua Hin. Oh, it's tough being a monk. So while you are freezing next week, just think of me by the beach teaching people how to meditate. So next week I won't be here. But why? Why do they invite a monk to do this? And it's not always like this. Just this morning I was in the mud pulling out bits of metal from the retreat center. And the day before, you know when it was really raining hard? We were out there getting soaking, working hard. So one day you're covered with mud, and the next day you're out sort of teaching meditation in a 5-star resort. I say it's a really interesting life as a monk. But you ask why do they invite people like monks to teach meditation at such places? What has a monk got that other people haven't got? Would you like to apply for that position? And sometimes you ask yourself, why do you come here for Friday evening to listen to a talk? Now, why are so many people listening to these talks on the internet, on YouTube? Where does that wisdom come from? And this is the talk which I'm going to give this evening about the meaning of life, but how you find out that meaning of life, the source of wisdom. One of the reasons I give this talk, that one of the people who come here sent me a transcript of an ABC broadcast, the radio broadcast, the Encounter program, which they thought was very interesting. I didn't think it was that good, but it was about a Anglican bishop, the Bishop of Edinburgh, who a few years ago resigned. He resigned as a bishop after a conference in Lambeth Palace with all the other bishops, where they discussed the gay community in the Anglican Church. And he was so upset just at the cruelty and the harshness of his fellow bishops against the gay community, he said, I didn't want to be part of this. And so he resigned. And so he's been a rebel, challenging his church from the inside. He didn't totally leave, but he just resigned as a bishop, challenging about the source of truth and where one finds meaning in life. And do we have to rely upon a god or a book or even a preacher to find that meaning? Is that the source of truth? And in his little presentation, which he gave at the Sydney Writers Festival early on, he just did miss too much about how we find that source of truth. As I mentioned here before, one can split religions into two types. Those which are called revealed religions, which basically said, here is a truth, this is the way it is. A book says this, a pope says this, you have to believe it or get out. That's revealed religion. And Buddhism, real Buddhism, and many other parts of many other religions are called realized religions. When you're not told what to believe, there's no great authority which you have to submit to, but you're told how to find out. You are given the encouragement and the tools and the means to find out for yourself, to find the meaning of life, not as a revelation which was given many years ago and which you just have to follow blindly, but a tool, a way, a path, a means, so every person can find out for themselves. And I think many of you know who have studied a religion like Buddhism, that is classic Buddha's teachings. When he said that he found a path, he said, through the jungle, an overgrown path which he cleared, which led to enlightenment. And he said that path was always there. He didn't make the path, he just cleared it because it was overgrown. So other people can walk on that same path to find the same meaning, to find the same truth. So all the Buddha did, and all any monk or nun, any teacher can do, is actually to teach that path so everyone can find out for themselves. But in particular, the way we find out for ourselves is important. Is it just belief, or is it just using intelligence? I must admit, in my life so far, I've come across many professors, and they haven't really inspired me all that much. And I think it's sometimes because our education system, to become a professor, to become a successful academic, is as almost you have to play by the rules of the game. And you can't be too rebellious, you can't challenge too much, otherwise you get kicked out of your university. And it's always the case that to find truth, you have to have a rebellious spirit, you have to challenge. But the most important thing is not to challenge sort of the university, or not to challenge other people, but to challenge yourself. To challenge your own ideas and views and assumptions. And that is the hardest thing to do. And this is the path of spirituality. It's a great challenge, and many people would prefer not to take up that challenge to find the truth. They would rather just believe what other people say and take it for granted. However, I hope that many of you are courageous enough and value that pursuit of truth to such a high degree that you are willing to do the work, and sometimes it's painful work, of challenging your assumptions and willing to let them go when they don't make sense anymore. But how do we find out what makes sense and what doesn't make sense? And the basic, one of the basic teachings of Buddhism is that there are what we call like defilements, these cravings, these emotional blockages which stop us seeing the truth, which stop us finding the meaning of life. And basically these are called the hindrances to seeing clearly what's really happening. And as you know, that I always listen to suggestions which people give me for the topics of the talk. And now I'm going to bring in one of the topics which somebody asked me to talk about at the beginning of the talk. Romantic love. Because why come romantic love has got something to do with finding out the meaning of life? Because romantic love is a great example of stupidity. And it is stupid, isn't it? That's why you say you're madly in love with something. And the madly is an important word to put before love. Because what happens, I mean, we all like romantic love. It's stupid, it's silly, but it's a bit of fun. It's like believing in Santa Claus. You don't want to get rid of that beautiful belief because it's good fun. But nevertheless, you know, when the kids grow up, they don't believe in Santa Claus anymore. And when you grow up, hopefully you don't believe in romantic love anymore, do you? Or do you haven't grown up enough yet? Because what is romantic love anyway? Here that we sort of see a partner, or potential partner, and we really sort of, we add so much onto that person which isn't really there. And why do we do this? It's because these emotional blockages, these cravings, we just want to fall in love. And sometimes we want to experience romance so much that it doesn't matter who that person is. One of the monks, who was a great monk, and he, when he was a young monk, you know, he was very honest, and he used to come and tell us, he said, yeah, you know, as a young monk, we're not supposed to like girls, you know, we're supposed to be monastic. But he said sometimes he was sitting in a temple, and this girl would come in, and he'd start looking at her. And, you know, she wasn't that beautiful, you know, her hair was mousy, flat-breasted, not particularly attractive. But, he said, she'll do. And that was a wonderful insight that monk had. He's still a monk because he realized what was going on. If you really want to feel those attractions, you know, it's good enough, because it's not the person which you're really interested in, it's actually the feelings of love, the feelings of romance. That's what the excitement is what you're really into. And I remember one of the other monks, he's coming here in December, he hasn't been here for many years, Ajahn Sumedho. We're having a big meeting of all the monks over in our retreat centre next December. I remember him telling me once that he went to visit his home and saw an old friend. I mean, really was old. And she was an old school friend. Asked, how are you going? He said, oh, I'm great you're here. You can come to my marriage. I said, you're a bit old. He said, no, this is my sixth marriage. And he said, why have you been married so many times? And she was very honest about it. She said, look, I really love the courtship, you know, looking for a nice partner and going out together, you know, and the engagement and planning the wedding and the whole ceremony. That's beautiful. It's what comes next I don't like. So I stop it there and start all over again. Now there's some truth in that, isn't it? Because it's that hope and that dreams when reality is not going to shatter your hopes and dreams, when you're planning, expecting, fantasizing, making it, and a beautiful ceremony. Actually, I read this the other day as well. And I mentioned this, we do marriages with Dennis, and sometimes I tell a few jokes. It's a happy occasion. One of the jokes was, you know, why is it in a marriage that the bride wears white and the groom wears black? And the answer is, you know, this is the answer I told before, it's because white is a symbol of purity. And that's the bride. So now you understand why the boy wears black. But I heard another reason why the bride wears white at a wedding ceremony. And that's because all domestic appliances are white. I'm going to get into trouble for that. It's only a joke, and I don't mean it. I just hit the boy first of all by wearing black, so now I hit the girl. I'm fair. But it's a good example of just how our desires can actually bend our mind. So we don't see the truth, but we see what we want to see. And this is coming on to the important part of my talk, is actually how desire and how ill will, these are called hindrances, hindrance one and hindrance two, how they actually bend the truth, and we can't trust it afterwards. Whenever we have any desire or ill will, even the smallest amount, we cannot trust the results of even our perceptions, let alone our thinking. This is a problem here. When we have desires, for example, the romantic love, we have desires, expectations, which are unreal, and you all know that. I'm not saying we shouldn't have relationships, but we should have relationships which are based in truth, in reality, rather than in expectations which will never be achieved. And of course, that's what happens to many people. They go into a relationship with so many expectations, and then when it doesn't work out the way you hoped, you get very sad, frustrated, angry, and it's very painful. If we could only go into a relationship with the right expectations, with realistic expectations to begin with, then our relationships would not be so traumatic, and maybe they could even last. That boy isn't perfect. How many times when you have romantic love, he's such a wonderful boy, such a beautiful, wonderful guy. Just ask his friends, ask his former girlfriends. Look, when you're buying a second-hand car, don't you actually take it to the RAC and get it checked out, first of all? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we have an RAC, which we, you know, got a prospective boyfriend or girlfriend. Take it to the RAC and get them checked out, first of all. and see what they're really made of. And then when you don't have unrealistic expectations, then you're getting to the truth of things, what a relationship is all about. And we're not denying relationships. We're not sort of trying to take away the joy of relationships. We're trying to put them in a solid meaning of truth. So you understand what you're getting into. You understand what's happening. And also, you're not disappointed when there's arguments, difficulties and troubles. They're not perfect. You're not perfect. There's that other story. I don't know when the last time I told this. I think I said last Tuesday in Armidale, I always like giving talks to an elderly audience. Because an elderly audience, they cannot remember the joke I said 3 weeks ago. So hopefully you don't remember the, you know, the story of this man. And he was from a very good family. He was reasonably, actually not really reasonably well off. He was actually quite rich. And he's well educated. You know, he was, you know, almost like Bachelor of the Month material. So he thought, look, I'm really wealthy, good looking, well educated. I'm going to find me the perfect wife. So he went all, he lived in Sydney. He went all around Sydney to find the most perfect woman to marry. And then he found this beautiful girl. I mean, she was so attractive. She'd be on the front cover of, I was going to say Enlightened Times, but that's not really the sort of magazine. That's coming out soon, our newsletter, coming out soon. On the front cover of like a glossy magazine. But even though she looked perfect, he couldn't marry her because she was a terrible cook. So he went looking through Melbourne. And in Melbourne he found an even more beautiful girl. I mean, she was stunning. Not only that, but she ran her own restaurant. A perfect cook. But he couldn't marry her either, because her fault was she was stupid. She hadn't finished her education, didn't know much about the world. All she knew was cooking. So she wasn't perfect enough. So he moved to Perth, of course. And there he found the perfect girl. I mean, she was absolutely perfect, so beautiful. She owned 3 restaurants, a Thai restaurant, Italian restaurant, an Australian restaurant. She was a perfect cook, and she was so intelligent. She had 2 PhDs. She was so charming, so intelligent. She'd come to Nolamara every Friday night. That shows how intelligent she is. She was the perfect girl. But he couldn't marry her either. You know why? Because she was looking for the perfect boy. That's a nice story. Because, yeah, I mean, there is no such thing as the perfect girl or the perfect boy. So be realistic. Desire and craving and romance makes perfection where it just is not. And when you get disappointed, that's suffering. And the reason was, you should have been smarter to begin with. You won't find a perfect boy. You won't find a perfect girl. So remember that. You're not perfect. They're not perfect. So that's why you fit together pretty good. But there's also, there comes a time, and again, what with romantic love, maybe just when you split. And what happens when you split? It's so sad and so painful. And you get so upset at your partner, especially if you've been married. I remember just a short time ago, being driven through Perth and looking at a number plate of a car. And it was IH and the letter 8, MYX. I hate my ex. It's a number plate someone had on their car. Why is it that people hate a person they thought was so perfect and so wonderful and so beautiful in every which way? Because usually what happens when one gets into anger, again, one cannot see any redeeming feature in that person who's hurt you, who's been cruel to you. And again, the anger, the ill will, again, is perverting your perceptions. You're not seeing what's really there. Have you ever noticed people who you hate have other people who love them and think they're wonderful beings? And you can't understand, how can you love a person like that? How can you respect them when you are angry and you hate them? There's no being in this world who doesn't have people who love them. There's no people in this world who don't have people who don't like them. Why? Is it something to do with that person? Or is it just what we add on to the reality of life? If you understand just how ill will changes the way we look at truth, we realize that desire and ill will are what prevent us seeing truth. Which is why if we want to find a meaning of life, if we want to find some truth, one of the first things which we have to do on the path to find meaning is to abandon our desires. So we're not going to see what we want to see. We're not going to add our hopes and expectations onto life. We're going to take away our ill will. So even if it's unpleasant, we're willing to face it if it's truth. We take away these two hindrances to seeing truth, desire and ill will. Let's take another example. Another example which creates so much pain and suffering in life. When somebody dies. They die when they're freshly born. 10 years, 20 years, 30, 50 years. How many people have you known who have died? Why is that so painful? Surely you should know by now that we can die at any time. I've seen people dying at all ages. Why can't we accept that that's the truth of things instead of saying something's gone wrong? Something's gone wrong. There was a lady, I read it in a book. She was, I think, 96 years of age. Healthy, hadn't had a day's illness in her life. And she went to have a checkup. This was in some hospital in the United States. And they found cancer. And she complained, why me? 96 years and you got away with it. And now you complain when you got a cancer. See, but even if you've been healthy for 96 years, people still think, why me? Can you not see just that's not really being honest to truth? So we understand that our time on this earth is not long. We're going to die. Why can't people accept that? To find truth, we have to get rid of our wishful thinking. And also get rid of our fear and ill will. To understand that death is, and there's nothing wrong with it. Indeed, when somebody was talking about wonderful heart surgeon who died, Chris O'Brien, who died over in Sydney, and saying only was it 56 years of age or something, 57, and he died. That's only 1 year. Actually, I'm 57 as well. Oh my goodness. So why did he die? I tell you why he died. Because he was born. Now that's not being flippant. There was one time. These are stories which I got from my teacher, Ajahn Chah. He was just so wise because he was very still. He didn't have desire and ill will. That's why he could see straight. There was one fellow who came to see him once. He'd been drafted into the Thai army. And he'd been wounded in a small battle on the borders. And he came to see Ajahn Chah. Look at me. I've been badly wounded. Why did this happen? What karma did I do to get these bullets in my body? Did I sort of kill someone in a previous life? Was I bad when I was young? Did I mistreat my mother or my father? Why did this happen to me? What's a karmic cause? And Ajahn Chah, without blinking, said, the reason you got shot was because you joined the army. That's very deep. It is deep. If you join the army, you shoot bullets at other people, and other people are going to shoot bullets at you. What do you expect? And some of those bullets are going to hit some soldier, they hit you. That's what happens. Do you get the meaning here? So when you join the human race, when you are born, it's part of the contract. You can die at any time, for any reason. Heart attack, cancer, a piano falling on top of you from six stories. It happens. Tsunami. So you can expect that, can't you? If you join an army, can't you expect to be shot? If you join the human race, can't you expect to get diseases and sick and die? That's basic Buddhist teachings. Old age, sickness and death is our inheritance. It's our reality. So don't ever think, complain, I've got cancer, why me? You got born, that's why. It's not a question whether you die. And this is one of the other things. Once you have a wisdom like this, you understand the meaning of life, you haven't got wishful thinking or not in denial of the truth. And denial, the great psychological power of denial, that's all come from ill will. I don't want to see this. I don't want to accept this. If you really want to be truthful, then you have to accept reality. Once you accept reality, it's not a painful, terrible thing. The pain, the difficulty is when you don't accept reality. And it shocks you sometimes. And because you are in denial of the reality, because you have so much wishful thinking, because you don't see the truth, you don't find the meaning of life, and it's more painful for you. When you accept life and death as it is, you know, like monks do, we're not afraid of dying. I'm afraid of old people's homes. So I say at least, you know, that heart surgeon, wonderful, he doesn't have to spend his ancient years in an old people's home. Actually, I heard another story about denial, about this old lady, 65 years of age. When I said this story in Armidale, I got a lot of complaints. 65 is an old, they said, because most of those were ancient. Is 65 old? Denial. Yes, it is. I had a youth group here years ago, and I only know there's up to about 25. And part of the youth group, you know, I was questioning them, I said, how old is old? And if you ask like 20-year-olds, how old is old? 40, they say, to that group, they said 35 and above is old. And I was about 42, so I knew where I stood. That was years ago. Now I'm really ancient. But anyway, you know, because of denial, people still thinking they're young. This 65-year-old girl, you know, she never got married. And so she was a business, a career woman. And you know, getting to the end of her life, she realized she'd missed something in life, and that was having a child. And being quite wealthy, she went to this a very expensive doctor, you know, gynecologist, who referred her to a fertility clinic, had got a sperm donor, and it's amazing what medicine can do these days. She actually conceived and gave birth to a healthy baby at 65 years of age. Amazing, isn't it? And while she came back home from hospital, and her friends, this is a joke by the way, isn't it? Once she came home from the doctor, there is a point to the joke. When she came home, of course her friends and her relations came to visit her and had a cup of tea and said, no, we've come to see the baby. And she said, not yet. So they had a cup of tea, and after they finished the cup of tea, can we see the baby now? Not yet, said the 65-year-old. So they had another cup of tea and a biscuit and said, can we see the baby now? She said, not yet. I said, why not yet? She said, oh, you can't see the baby until it starts crying. Why, they said, because I've forgotten where I put it.
This is what happens when you're 65 years of age. See what denial does? It gets you an ulcer. You lose the baby when you have it so late in life. So look, get real. For me, when I do so many funeral services, it does not matter how old that person is. A baby, 10 years of age, 50, 100 years of age. It's not the length of life, is it, which is important? Isn't it the quality of life which is important? 10 beautiful years as a wonderful child, giving so much love and so much joy to the parents. What a wonderful blessing that is. 50 years, 60 years, 57 years, that heart surgeon. Wonderful, beautiful life. What a great contribution. That's not sad. That's wonderful. So you can see that some people think, oh, it's so sad he died so young. I think it's so wonderful he lived so long and such a high quality life. Now can you see another way of looking when you become real? When you become real, things like death, which is part of life, don't shock you. They don't sort of upset you. And the whole meaning changes, not from prolonging life at all costs, but from making life meaningful. Which I think you understand when we get to the euthanasia debate. Why is it that most people in Australia think that euthanasia should be allowed? Because they also realise it's not the length of life, but the quality of life is more important. And when you have quality, now we're getting more to the spiritual part of life. It's not sort of the money, the length of life, how long you live. It's your quality. Now that is where we can find true meaning. That's not having desire or ill will. That's getting real. And if more people would actually put more emphasis on the quality which of their day, what type of day have you spent today? Is it been a high quality? Or if you're just trying to get this day out of the way to go and do something else. Is your whole life, work, coming here, whatever, have you really been in this day? Or are you trying to get rid of it to go somewhere else? That's not a way to live. That's not high quality. You don't get any meaning there out of life. So these are truths which you listen to and you accept. And why does a monk have to tell you this? The reason is because when you let go of your desires and ill will, which is our training, you can see things far more clearly. So you don't need a book, a Bible, a Quran, or even Dhammapada to tell you the truth. You don't need a preacher to tell you the truth. You need to let go of your desires and ill wills to be able to see the truth. So you're not bending the truth to fit you. No more wishful thinking, no more denial of the truths of life. Be real and see life as it really is. Also, to be able to see life as it truly is, we need to be really awake. And so many people are tired, deeply tired. It's one of the great reasons why people get depressed these days. Because of how tired their brains are. And you obviously know why, because you work too hard. To be able to sustain your lifestyle, to pay your mortgage, you have to work so hard. Wouldn't it be wonderful not to have such a big house? Have a house like me, a cave, 3 meters in diameter. That way you don't have to work so hard to pay off mortgage. Downsize. I've seen some people with these huge houses. I know that story I said many years ago. This place I went to in I think it was in Shelley, a riverside mansion, beautiful views. I went in there to bless the house because the owner was a Thai girl. And when I went inside, remember I'd come all the way from Serpentine, 1 hour. And so the first thing I did was to ask to go to the toilet. And no joke, no exaggeration, the lady had to draw me a map how to get to the loo. That's how big the house was. It was. And I asked, how many people live with you in this house? She said, no one, just me. Oh, that was so sad. Huge mansion, huge amount of money, but so incredibly lonely. Is that what you want in life? Is that the meaning of life, to get your mansion and have so much loneliness in your life? Is that, everybody knows that's completely ridiculous. She blew it. She followed money rather than following something much more important. So what's your meaning of life? Desire, cravings and ill will, they sort of bend things. And you don't see the truth of it. You don't need a big house. The craving, yeah, I want that. You don't need a big car. You don't, unless you're fat like monks are, you need a bit bigger car. You don't need all these things. So, the less you have, the less you need to work. You can retire younger. You don't need so much. You can have more time for yourself and for your family and for the temple and other things. Can't you, when you have less? So, reality, when you get rid of desires, you don't need so much. That's why monks have such a wonderful life. They're just one robe. You don't have to worry about what you wear in the morning. You know, just a few possessions. I'm going to Thailand tomorrow morning, to the Sheraton, and I don't pay at all. You have to have given up the whole world to go to places like that. So when you give up things, it's amazing what you get to go and do. But when you have less, you don't need to rush around so fast. And that's one of the other reasons, because we get tired, we can't see the truth. We're dull. One of the third hindrances called sloth and torpor. And any of you who've been on one of our retreats know, for the first 2 or 3 days, I always encourage people to meditate flat out, which means sleep. And because I've been in this business a long time, I know where people are at and I know what they need. But a lot of times people are just so tired that all they really want is a nice quiet place and a comfortable bed just to catch up. And I had amazing results when people come on these meditation retreats and they just really relax. No schedule, get up whenever you want, go to bed whenever you want, no mobile phones. You know, our retreat centre down in Serpentine, Jhana Grove, is brilliant. We found that we're in this little valley here and you can't get a signal. It's just so well designed. You can bring your mobile phones, as many as you like, you won't get any signals. Not many places like that in the world. So you can really relax. No one can get to you. And isn't that just paradise? And of course you know it's paradise. That just shows you just how hard you have to work and how busy you are. No way can a person see the truth when they're so tired. In traditional Buddhism, the Buddha was striving, 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 striving. He was so tense and tired, he could never get enlightened. He could never even get into deep meditation. He had to relax, first of all. That's why he invented this middle way business. To relax, be comfortable. Not so indulge the body, but not hurt the body. Have a good rest, a good meal, a good wash, and then you can start seeing the truth. Then you can find meaning in life. So that middle way of finding truth by relaxing brings up your energy so you don't feel so tired. You know, it's because of tiredness that people make so many mistakes in life, such as saying the wrong thing to the people you love. You know that's so true. We say terrible things, we don't really mean it because we're so tired. You make mistakes and they hurt big time. Sometimes we're so tired we can't see what we're doing to our body. And that's where we get these sicknesses from. The cancers, the heart disease. It's just body wearing out. Because we're too tired to notice. Sometimes when we do a little bit of meditation we become so aware of our body. We hear our body saying, relax, go to bed, go to sleep. Sometimes even as a monk, sometimes, you know, I work hard, but sometimes I listen to my body and it says, Ajahn Brahm, you need to have a rest. And of course, I'm in a position, you know, being a monastic lifestyle, you can actually listen to the body and also follow it. Take that break. Because it's worth it. It's healthy. You last longer. And you can serve more. You can do your job much better when you relax and resting. So, understand just the tiredness creates so many problems in your life. It makes you grumpy, it makes you angry, it makes you sick. Why can't we take more rest in life? We can. Do less. Repeat that saying, don't do today what you can pull off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. Please remember that. So don't be one of these people who always have to get things out of the way, who always has to complete the job today, who always wants to make everything perfect in your home, in your life, in your office. Is that what life's all about? And that's enjoying the moment and resting, and don't get so tired. But the next thing, why we can't find the truth, remember, like desire and ill will, and then this tiredness. The next of these hindrances is like restlessness. It's because we can't stay still long enough to understand what's really happening. There's one of our old members a long time ago. I think some of you may remember Chippy, who used to live down the road. Really nice old guy. I remember him telling me once, one of his daughters, he had lunch with his daughter. And his daughter had been married for 20, 25 years and brought up a family. And the last of their children had finally left home, got married and set up with their partner. And so after all those years, now her and her husband were together alone at last. And so they went on a holiday. And when they came back, she said to her father, she said, that's amazing. After all these years, now I'm finding the fellow I've been sleeping next to for 25 years. They were so busy, you know, doing things, bringing up their children, they never really got to know each other. And it was as if they were finding out about each other for the first time. Obviously they got to know each other when they married. But this whole space of time, raising your kids, so busy, so demanding, so rushing around, they lost contact with each other. So it was like marrying a new guy. Finding a different person. Because now they were slow enough to see. A lot of times the reason why we can't see the truth of things is because we're going too fast to really see. I try not to keep repeating myself, but this story about monastery, I'll do it very briefly because many of you know this story. Monastery at Serpentine, 2.16 kilometres up on the hill. Been going up and down that road for 9 years, always in a car. And one day after 9 years, I walked up that hill. First time I'd ever walked up that hill. And I could not recognise my surroundings. The hill was totally different. You try that when you go home, maybe tomorrow morning. If you've always gone up and down your road in the car, walk up that road. You'll find it looks totally different. Stand still. And you'll see things you never noticed before. Guaranteed. That's what happened to me in that hillside. I've been walking so fast. Or rather, looking through a fast window of a fast car. You don't have time to see. When you stop, you've got time to feel, to see, to know. Knowledge takes time. About 10 days ago, our monastery went up to visit the monastery at New Norcia, the Benedictine monks. We've got this wonderful relationship with them. We go up there once a year, they come to see us once a year. And so, you know, we talk about spiritual things together. Now, it really is good friends. And they were telling us that when they read their scriptures, Number one, they take a tiny piece of scripture and they deliberately read it slowly. Now, really slowly. They train themselves not to speed read, but the opposite, to slow read. Maybe like a word at a time, one word, 1 minute. And they say they do that because when they do it very slowly, they see much more meaning in those words, in those sentences. And I thought, wow, then that's really interesting, and I really agree with that. When you read a book, especially if it's a spiritual book, how about trying that method? Read it slowly, and you'll find you will hear much more meaning. Because we go fast, we skip over things. We assume that we know, which is why we remain stupid. So we should go slowly. When you go slowly, that's the opposite of this restless mind flitting backwards and forwards. When you go slowly, you've got time to feel, to know deeply. Your partner you live with, how about spending some slow time together? Not going fast, but lingering with each other to get to know each other more deeply. How about in your garden, going slowly, lingering, going deliberately much slower than you are comfortable with, to feel it much better, much more fully. To know your body, linger with it. Go slowly, like I teach in the beginnings of the meditation. So you don't rush off into the breath and try and get enlightened 10 minutes before the meditation finishes. That's why people are stupid. They rush so fast. So if you linger and slow down, you find you see more, you feel more, you know more. This is how we find the meaning of life. Now, of course, those of you who are smart enough would understand, how do you do this? This is precisely what you do in the training of meditation. Meditation is not just to get rid of your cancers, to get rid of your stress, to be more positive in life. Yeah, those are the side benefits. But the main reason is so you can become wise. So you can see. As far as Buddhism is concerned, it was meditation as a way for finding wisdom, for finding the meaning of life. In this talk I told you that the whole purpose of this talk is to show how you find the meaning of life. Not belief, not reading a book and believing the book, not believing the teacher, not sort of believing the creed and being another religious fundamentalist, a born-again Buddhist. Although I must say that all Buddhists are born-again Buddhists because we believe in reincarnation. But you know, it's not the real born-again idea. The extremists who believe anything. But when you learn how to slow down, when you learn how to have energy by resting, by following a middle way, when there's no desire, there's no ill will, then you are free to see the truth. And that's what we do in meditation. Have you ever noticed when I talk about meditation, make peace with this moment. Allow it to be. Embrace it. Which is mean no desire, no ill will, no wanting it to be something different. No rejecting it because you're uncomfortable, you're painful, but getting to know these things. You can't know anything when you reject it through ill will. Or when you want something more, you're trying to get onto the next stage, the next moment, trying to get into enlightenment or whatever. That's all desire. Stay where you are. Rest. Get energy. Be still. Then you'll find what the meaning of life is. And that was totally different to this transcript which somebody told me. It was all about either believing or being logical, being reasonable, arguing, working it all out, using your intellect. Now, you've all done that before. It doesn't work. There has to be another way of finding a truth, finding meaning, finding something which really is so true, it does work, takes away the problems of life. Now I know why I was hurting, why I was suffering, why I was pained. You do this through making the mind still. going slow, resting, getting your energy up. No desire, no ill will, making peace with the moment, being kind, being gentle, being here. Being here long enough to get your energies up, being still enough to see the truth, to see the Dhamma. Just like a Buddha sitting under a Bodhi tree, being so still. He didn't need to read a book to be the wisest person who ever lived. He didn't need a university degree. Just needed to be still, to see, to take away all this wishful thinking, all this fear coming from ill will, to see the truth of things. That's the only reason why monks like me go to nice gigs like at the Sheraton in Hua Hin, Thailand. Because you've been still enough to let go and allow that wisdom to come and to flow. I never got wise by going to university. That was a complete waste of time. Not really a waste of time. I had a lot of fun, but not really sort of a best way of using your time. You never got wise by reading all the suttas and the Abhidhamma and all this sorts of stuff. That's just more ideas. It was Ajahn Chah, this monk. He'd only done grade 4 at school, that's all. That's all they had at school. And that was amazing. You go as a young monk, when I was just 23, go to Thailand, here you got all your university degrees. No, from Cambridge University. And this guy, grade 4, has already completed. And he was so smart. You felt a fool in his presence. And how can someone become so smart and so wise and see things so deeply? Because he knew how to be still. Because he let go of his desires and cravings. He didn't want to see the world the way he wanted it to see. He had no ill will, no fear left. So you could see things as they truly are. So if you want to find the meaning of life, this is classic Buddhism. It doesn't matter whether you're Tibetan Buddhist, whether you are Theravada Buddhist, Hinayana Buddhist, Zen Buddhist, Mahayana Buddhist, whatever Buddhist. It doesn't matter what you call yourself. It's all about learning how to let go of those hindrances, to stop them, resist them. So you can really see what's really happening in life. And when you do that, it's not just seeing the brilliant teachings of Buddhism, it's learning how to relate to a person. You know, you can be friendly towards anybody. You can have great fun. You can work in the dirt one moment, and then you can actually be the big shot the next moment. It doesn't really matter. Because you're not holding on to anything. You see the truth of things in the stillness of the mind. So meaning of life. This is how you find that meaning of life. And you know it's the truth. Sometimes a person asks me, if you are really still, how do you know it really is the truth? It's not because it's exactly how it says in some sort of book. You know it's the truth by what it does to you in your life. If it does take away the problems, the fears, the suffering of life, truth is what eradicates suffering. So the more close you get to truth, the more peaceful and happy your life becomes. So anyone who comes up to me and says, they're enlightened, they still argue with their husband. No way. If you're not a happy, peaceful person, then you don't understand what the truth is. The truth is something which will liberate you from those problems. And that's like an acid test of how wise a person is. So a person comes here and says, I've been meditating for so many years. I've been coming to this place for the last 20 years. He said, I'm so wise. Doesn't really matter. They may have written so many books. That doesn't really matter. A wise person is a person who has very little suffering in life. Not just because things are going well. They've got no suffering even when things are falling apart. That's a test. I read this poem many years ago. It's easy enough to be happy when life goes along like a song.
for the one worthwhile is the one who can smile when everything goes all wrong.
Can you do that? When your plane is plummeting to the ground.
I'm going on the aircraft tomorrow. Hope we don't hit turbulence.
Can you be happy when the doctor comes along and says, you've got cancer?
I mentioned Dr. K.C. Dhamananda, who's been here. I read in his biography. He died of cancer. When he was diagnosed with cancer, the doctor told him, you've got cancer. You know what he did? He laughed. He just broke up laughing. His doctor said, that's the only time I've ever seen anyone who's been diagnosed with cancer laughing. Now that's a good monk. Can you do that? Why not? It doesn't cost anything. It's probably better for your health.
Now that's a sign that guy was wise enough actually to show his wisdom by how he reacted to one of the things which really scares you in life. How are you going to react when somebody dies?
Can you laugh? Can you be at peace and happy? Knowing that, yep, this is what happens. We had a wonderful time to get together. Fare ye well. Thank you for being here so long. That's the sign of wisdom. Wisdom is what makes you at peace with life, which gives you happiness no matter what happens. The one who can smile when everything goes all wrong. So that's the meaning of life. That's how it's found out. And that's what it tastes like. Once you've found that meaning. And just to sum up again, all by letting go of some of your desires and wishful thinking. Be real. And don't let the ill will and the negativity bend the truth because you just don't like to face up to the truth. It's not that bad. Death, separation, breakup of relationships, failing examinations. A lot of kids have just done their examinations. One of the kids was just telling me this evening about just finishing one of her exams. It's great when you fail an examination. It's one of the best things you can ever do. Because when you fail an examination, you don't have to take it again. When you pass, there's always more examinations next year. Get it out of the way early. You have a more fun life. And don't believe examinations are going to make you happy. Rather passing. There's been old graffiti at Cambridge. Exams kill by degrees. That's what they said. So everybody knows, just because you get your university degree, BA, MA, PhD, whatever you get, doesn't make you smart and wise. There's many more things which make you successful in life than that. So keep things in perspective. When you're wise, nothing really harms or hurts you in life. Then you know what wisdom is. You found the meaning of life. Freedom from suffering. Okay, so that's the talk this evening. How to find the meaning of life.